this down.
Thank you, Jason. He asked me to say his name 3 or 4 times so it'd be on the CD. I have to tell you, I was a little nervous I wasn't going to be able to see over it, so I was going to ask the technology people to make me much taller on these screens. So I'm going to be tall in my next. My name's Nancy Burkhalter. My name's Nancy Burkhalter. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I stopped doing drive-by Al-Anon in May of 1986. And actually, by that time, every relationship I was in was a drive-by experience, actually. I do want to thank some folks. Jason, thank you for calling me. And thank you for calling me and let me be a part of not only this conference, but my recovery. And thanks for sending Julie instead of yourself, and for picking us up at the airport. She actually came in the same day that we arrived, and that's always good. And thank you. And the car ride here was remarkable. It starts. I would never have thought this, but that's when the conference starts. Is when somebody's at that airport and they've met their commitment, and you've got new friends in the car, and you visit all the way here, and what a blessing. Thank you for the tapers. You know, I actually have met a few people that's their meetings. In other words, they live someplace so remote that they either have very few meetings or those CDs are their meetings. So I want to thank them completely. Hope you'll visit that place. You know, one of the things that's coming to my heart is that sometimes those of us who are in the program, I do want to say that my home group is the Unity Group in Denton, Texas. I have a sponsor, and plus Vinoy and I, the speaker tomorrow, we sponsor each other when our sponsor says no, and works out. So, yeah. It kind of goes like this. Vinoy will call me and say, "You won't believe what Neil said." And she'll tell me, and I go, "Oh, precious, you do not have to do that." Oh. That is so overrated. That you don't have to do that. So, and the truth is that I had some 12-step recovery before I came to Al-Anon, and when I got there, I wasn't going to need what you needed, and I believe that. I actually believe that, and so I would evaluate anything my sponsor said. I would, you know, give it a thorough evaluation, and as to whether I needed to do that, And today, no matter what you ask me to do, no matter what my sponsor asked me to do, I'm willing, I believe, today to do that. You know, they say the three words that a sponsor likes to hear least is, "I've been thinking." Okay? With my sponsor, I know things are not going well when I can't wait to call. I've got this great idea, and cannot wait to call. And the words I don't want to hear are, "Really? Really?" I know then, maybe don't talk anymore. But anyway, yeah, really, and maybe not. Maybe not. Wait. Why don't we wait? And so, anyway, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful to Al-Anon, and other I'm grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for sharing their program with us. I can't live long enough to repay what these programs have given me. I can't. And I'm grateful to be here. I grew up in alcoholism. I know that to be true. I grew up in alcoholism, and I know that that's not unique in this room. But my first memory that I have growing up is my mom and dad being in the kitchen, and my mother has my dad's head in her grip. And she's going, "Ray, I want you to go to work. And then I want you to come home. Go to work, come home." Now, this is a true story. Most of what I'm going to tell you, I wish wasn't true, by the way. Well, the deal is my daddy could go to work. He's pretty good about going to work. He really did provide for us physically. But the coming home part was pretty hard for the old boy. And it might be that day, maybe not. But here's what I know today was the situation. My dad would work a full day's work, and he would start to come home, and he believed, really, to his innermost self, he believed that he could stop at the local and have a couple of beers. I know today that he believed that. And then he would come home, and we'd sit down and have dinner and ask each other how our days were. How did your day go? Now, that hadn't happened yet, but my daddy believed that that could happen and that he deserved that because he did not. My dad would say he was an alcoholic. He did before he passed. He was an alcoholic that never found sobriety. But I know that he believed that because he did not know that the phenomenon of craving was going to happen. Not sometimes, not maybe. He did not know that. And my mother believed that he would come home. And that's what she needed. She needed him to come home. She could tell. Have you noticed that untreated Al-Anon? Now, untreated Al-Anon can tell whose tires are coming in the driveway. She could tell whether they were his tires, which they better be, or the mailman. You know, she could always tell. And the situation was that she believed that she had the solution to alcoholism. And I know I grew up in alcoholism because when he wasn't there at 5 o'clock, she would go to the phone. And I used to do this, but trust me, I'm old enough that it was this. I decided to tell the truth. But she'd go to the phone and she'd start calling all the numbers that were listed by the phone, which, by the way, were not pediatrician or what you have here, Rite Aid. It would have been Bloody Bucket in Lubbock. It would be Joe's or whatever's, all the bars. And she'd call, right? And she'd say, "Ray Burkhalter there?" And of course, the bartender said, "Nope." She called the next one. "Ray Burkhalter there?" "Nope." And, you know, go down the list. And you got to stay with me here for a minute. Now we know where he isn't. Now, my mother was not an Al-Anon. She was an alligator. Okay? Because they're snappy. And you never know, and they can track you down, right? There are people in here that had alligators. Yeah. And I'm telling you, now we know where he isn't, but that doesn't get an alligator down. It doesn't depress them. It doesn't stop them because you'd say, "Get in the car. Get in the car. We're going to find this boy." And and you know what? The part that's not so funny is I don't want to go. I don't want to go find him. Apparently, we don't like him a lot. And I don't want to go get him. I don't want to go in another smoky bar and beg my daddy to come home. But alcoholism doesn't leave anybody out. But I don't want to do it, but we get in the car. And I got to tell you, she could find him. There's about 5 choices. She could find him on the first shot. Of course, his truck was parked, you know, kind of against the dumpster. And he thought was invisible, I guess. I don't know. But we found him most of the time in that first shot. But then you send the kids in. I don't want to go in. You send the kids in and you say, Daddy, come home. Mama wants you to come home. And, of course, I don't want to come home. I'm going to have a couple more beers. Tell her I'll be home. And so you go tell Mama, and, of course, that doesn't work out. So you go back in. What I know today is I humiliated my daddy one day at a time. I didn't know that's the best I had. And but eventually he would come on out, and he'd be in the parking lot. And I know I was raised in alcoholism. Another way I know is because my mother would say, I want you to ride home with your daddy. I don't believe she would have put me in harm's way, but I know she didn't know how much he'd had to drink, how long he'd been there. But what she did know was that he would come home. And that's what she needed. We'd get home and sit around the table to eat that cold food. And I would always be the one that would blow it. I'd turn around to say something. I'd say, Daddy, and boy, those alligator eyes, we'd cut around, and she'd say, do not talk to him. Okay, I said, let's review. We get home, you cook a hot dinner, he's not here, we go get him where he isn't, we bring him home so we cannot talk to him. At this point, I cannot wait to get married. I cannot wait. But I don't have to worry about that much at that point. I finally asked my mother, I said, why do we do this? We don't like him. So why do we do this? And she said, with all the sincerity that you can say as a parent, if we didn't go get him, he would not know that we were angry with him. Now, I could have lived with that. But she was serious as a heart attack. She really was serious. And she said, if we speak to him, he will not know he's being punished. Because as much as my daddy believed that he could drink, my mother believed that if you punish them right, and if you punish them enough, that perhaps my daddy was going to wake up one morning and say, oh, you want me to go to work and come home? I believe I can do that. And still hadn't happened. But that hope eternal was there. That hope, that, and I believe that he didn't know that he was an alcoholic, and I believe that he believed he could drink, and that my mother believed with all her heart that she had the solution to that. And so I'm growing up, but I also discovered something else. And that's, well, I don't know, by age 10, 11, I was intellectually superior. Okay? I was the smartest person I knew, which kind of there, wasn't hard. When I get right down to it, I thought, who needs to be told to go to work? Yeah, I thought my daddy was special. But I really did, I began to cultivate that belief. I really did, because I needed, there's a difference. I needed to believe that. How could I be a part of this family? How could this really be true for me? I'm going to be somebody someday. I had to believe that. And so I began to act like I was smarter than, had more money than, fill in the blank. But I also at that point began to develop a hatred for my mom, for my dad, that was palpable. I'm a hatred, and I treated him as though I hated him. I hated my mother because she liked him. I mean, it just seemed fair. But the truth is that I hated these people, and I could never see my behaviors, what I'm trying to tell you, but I hated them for everything. I could not finish a sentence. I could say, could you pass me that water, because my daddy ruined my whole life. I couldn't. And I got to tell you, one reason after I got to you, I realized is that if I had any responsibility, then I'd have to do something about it. And I needed to believe that every problem I had and everything that went on that was hurtful to me, it was my daddy's fault. And I want you to let your imagination to go as far as it can go about the things that I said to my mom and dad, the way I treated them, because I would not repeat many of the things behind this podium, the things that I said to them and the things that I called him. Okay, one such thing is I loved using words, I don't know why this is coming up, that I knew my daddy didn't understand. I loved seeing the embarrassment on his face. I really believed that if I could hurt him as much as I believed he hurt me, that I would feel better. And it's one thing when you're a kid, but I want you to know that I took that opinion and that feeling way, way, way into recovery. Way into recovery, and it was important to me. And what that gives you is not only this feeling of being superior, but an arrogance. My arrogance walked into the room before me. And I really meant it. I'm going to be somebody someday. I don't want you to know who I am today, but I want you to know who I'm going to be someday. I'm going to be somebody someday. And but I go to school. Of course I go to school. I don't want to ever be at home. I love school because I didn't want to be at home. I would have done anything to be at home. And when I graduated from high school, first of all, I probably should say, you know, you don't take anybody home. You don't invite people over for slumber parties. You don't know who's going to be home when they're home. Okay, you really don't know what it's going to look like. So I didn't do that. So I don't have any really close friends. So graduation comes. I don't even, you know, my parents weren't there. They didn't come. There was nothing that connected us. I have no memory whatsoever of anybody in our family hugging or touching one another. None. None. All I could do was live there and survive, having nothing but money, having nothing but whatever it took for me to feel better on the outside. There was nobody home. But anyway, of course, I graduated from high school because I am brilliant. And, well, that might still be true, Jason, but that's the second time I've mentioned your name. And but I went to college. Of course I went to college. And I'm going to be rich and famous and need no one. Grow up in alcoholics, in an alcoholic home, you got to learn not to need anyone. And I'm not going to need anyone. And so I will be rich and famous and be on my way. And I believed when I moved to college that I wouldn't be there, I guess. I thought that I would leave all that behind, right? And so I'm going to be rich and famous. And then I majored in education. Little glitch. I'm not rich, nor am I famous. But anyway, so I begin. But I got to tell you, because I learned that if you punish somebody enough and you punish them right, you can, in fact, cure alcoholism. Because when I got to college, I started getting some friends because I was an athlete. And so I made some friends that I competed with. And one night, seriously, I can remember the night like it was yesterday, that somebody started talking about, well, we want to go out tonight and play pool, listen to music or whatever, and we can drink. Boing! They were going to go drink. And I thought, well, I can fix that. So I said, well, I got to tell you, if you're going to go and you're going to drink, the only people who can go are the ones that fit in my car. Now, I have to tell you, I don't know, I'm 71. And back then, cars were about the length of this room, remember? Chevrolet Impala or something. And so, and you know college, because you can pack some people in a car, okay? So we got all these people, and now this is going to make some of you Al-Anons cry, so get ready. I'd get them all in there, and we'd drive to the bar, right? Now, most of you only had one husband to watch, or maybe one kid. We'd get to bar and they would spread out on me. Think about that. I got about 8 to 10 to watch, okay? But I have been trained, you know, growing up. I've been trained. And so now I'm not going to drink because that's stupid. Seriously, I'm not going to drink because that's stupid and I'm not stupid. Like my dad, who's pathetic and a loser, right? So they'd begin to spread out and they'd drink and they'd drink. And boy, I tell you, it was hard. It was hard. Because some of those friends, whoa, went home with people they did not know. Some of them drank and over and they passed out. It was horrible. And I did everything I could do. I want you to know that I'd begin to gather as many of them as I could, put them back in the car, right? And all of a sudden, my whole attitude on life changed. My outlook and attitude changed because it is now punishment phase. I'm telling you, it still kind of makes my heart race when I think about it. You know, I'm not in recovery yet. So I got about at least 50% of them back in the car. And we get back to the dorm, and oh man, I love this part. And there were, over in the athletic dorm, there was a metal steel stairs, right, to get up to the second floor. And so I would get the ones that lived on the second floor out first, and I would help them halfway up the stairs, and then I'd let go. Do you know what that sounds like? It is a beautiful thing. It's a no guilt, no guilt whatsoever. I'd take some of them in, and in a dorm room, you know, you have like a desk and one little table and twin beds and whatever, that's about it, a sink, whatever. And so I would prop somebody up on the table, and I'd say, let me help you. Let me get your night clothes, knowing that the second I stepped away, they're going right off that table. Now, just like I asked my mama, I can remember her name. B. Smith said to me, if you really want to help, why couldn't you just like go all the way up the stairs? Or put us on the bed rather than the table. And I looked at her just like my mother looked at me. I said, I don't want you to be the pathetic losers fill in the blank that my daddy is. And if you drink, drinking is bad, and people who drink are very bad and they need to be punished. And I was very serious and very sincere. And so if I didn't treat them the way that I did, they wouldn't know that they're being punished. And so I kept doing it. I don't figure I owed any amends because they kept getting in my car. I mean, when you think it through, you get in my car. Then I graduated from college. Of course I did. I probably should add this one thing that when I was in college, I would have done anything. I worked with different professors on campus or whatever. I would have done anything to get attention. I was so immature when I went away to school. And already I know I need attention. And the only way I know to get it, however, is to run your life. I mean, I really do. I've got to be sort of in charge, like being the designated driver. Which, by the way, isn't hard when you're the designated everything, including the designated her, right? And so I begin to notice that I have no idea who I am. That even starting in college, I began to do things that I would listen to you forever, but you never knew anything about me. And already I begin, I know I'm not alone in this. I wanted you to hurry up when you were telling me the problem because I already had the solution. You know, just kind of hurry up. I love Pat Clater. I just have to say that. She said an expression. I can't tell you what she said because I got done listening way before she got done talking. And that kept happening to me. And that happened all through college. That's when I really began to realize that I did not know how to deal with my life on life's terms, but I did begin to know how to help you live your life on life's terms. And so that's what I gave. And then I got a job. I graduated. Of course I got a job. Okay? I was living in these singles apartments, driving a brand new car, looking good. I had anything I wanted. Now, my daddy paid for all that, but he ruined my whole life. He owed me. Now, I'm getting a salary, but I got to tell you, and I continued that attitude of needing to be in charge of every single thing into my workplace. I was horrible to work with. No matter what the situation was, I treated people horribly. However, I got a lot of teaching awards. I want to kind of get that in on the tape. lots of teaching awards, which, by the way, isn't hard to do when you do your job and Vinoy's job and Tracy's job, because I just did it better. And I could look you in the eye and say, that's just the kind of person I am. I want to be helpful. I want to make sure that things go well, if you will. And boy, I started that pattern let me give you an example. I used to coach, and I would be given an assistant coach. I don't know why this example is coming up for me, but I had an assistant coach, and I have a memory of her coming up and talking to me about something that we were going to do. What is it that you would like me to do to help? And I actually can remember saying, well, maybe you could stand over there and I'll get back to you. I actually have that memory, and then let your imagination go. Every job. And I could probably have retired much earlier if I had the money I used moving. I would teach at this district and they would not take my suggestions. Do you all have districts here in Oregon? I mean, districts of schools, and there's so many schools in that district. And I would try to help. I would give them ideas on new programs and things that they should do. And when they didn't listen, I packed and moved to another school district across Texas, okay? Thinking with all sincerity, thinking that I was just going to a better place. I was just going to a better place. But perhaps I could help this. If I go there, perhaps I can help them. Now, again, it's one thing to believe something like that. It's another thing to be desperate to believe that. I was desperate to believe that. And you did not want to work with me. I was not a part of my family. I can remember the only time I went home was when it involved the keys to a new car, presents in the back seat. But they ruined my whole life. And I, again, just over and over and over again, I went to graduate school. Of course I did. Let me tell you about graduate school. It was a blast. In case you wonder if I'm not Al-Anon, okay, by now. Okay, I'm at Western Michigan University. Full ride. Full ride. Oh, I thought you might. Okay. Stop it. Anyway. And so I'm going to get my master's degree, of course. And so this is what that looked like. I was taking 12 hours a semester. That's what the normal load was. So I took 15. I got to look good, partly because I'm from Texas. You know, you got to look good. But also, if you're going to take 12, I got to take 15 in order to be okay. Okay, so I'm teaching three classes at Western. So that means that I go to Western Michigan University in the mornings. I teach three classes. I woke up at the same time every morning because I knew how long it took to eat that breakfast and go teach three classes. During the week, I drove through the same fast food place. I knew how long it took for me to do that. And then, because I heard that there was a little Catholic college that was going to have to close one of their programs if they couldn't find a professor to teach it. Dun, dun, dun. So now I'm teaching two more classes in the afternoon to save their program. I believe I did save their program, right? When you see it through, okay? So I'm doing that every day. I get done. Graduate classes were in the evening, okay? And so I would then eat some dinner, and then I went to class. And then I went to the library until it closed, and then I went home and I did that again the next day. That's what it had to look like for me to do. Everything had to be in its own little box so that I would look good. Made all A's. I made all A's. I was there 9 months. I got my master's degree in 9 months, and I made all A's, 4.0. Okay? I have a piece of paper that proves that. Now, I want to jump ahead on something that's actually healthy for a second. I have all these papers. I have actually more papers than that, but I don't know where they are. I don't. My mother had them all framed, and I hope that, I mean this sincerely in case I don't say it. I don't know where they are, but I do know where my coins are. I know where my coins are. I do not regret that past because it's given me the opportunity to do the things that I love. I love to teach children and adults. But okay, so since I don't know where I was, Jason. Oh, man. I was making all A pluses. And I came home, and so I'm teaching school again. I got to tell you, I want you to get that my life was based on what I learned in alcoholism. I didn't know how to be a friend among friends. I didn't know how to be a member of my family. I have zero memories of my life growing up except the ones that are not good. That's my story. I've heard from different family members that there were things that my family did together. Now, that didn't have anything to do with emotionally or spiritually, but apparently we went on vacations and things like that. I have no memory. I have an older brother, and I don't remember having an older brother. He's in my life today, thanks to you. But I didn't participate in anything except those things that were outside of me. Remember, don't look at me today. Look at me as who I'm going to be someday. And that was true because I know I'm not enough. I was great at looking like I thought I was enough, but I know I'm not enough because I kept trying to get another diploma or something that would make me enough. I just kept seeking that, another town, another school, whatever outside of me that would make me enough. And it doesn't work. It doesn't happen. So, in each place I went, by the way, in case you're thinking of doing this. When you move, you're there when you get there. You are. And if you were raised in alcoholism, where your whole foundation is, you know, not enoughness, invisible, feeling invisible, then when you carry that to the next job, to the next whatever, you're there, and it's not different. And I know that. Then I was never going to get married, remember? And I decided, so it would probably be best not to fall in love, okay? And you know what's sad about that? And I'm being serious about this, too. You can do that. I really didn't allow myself to have close friends. I didn't allow myself to get to know someone intimately in any way. Not going to happen. I do not want to go find you. I don't want to bring you home. I don't want to punish you. And those were the things that I believed happened. And so I'm not going to do that. And then I slipped up. I slipped up and I fell in love. Okay? Now, and you know, with the one you're going to be with forever. I mean, you give all your stuff away. You're not going to need it because you're going to be here forever. And about 3 years later, she forgot that we were going to be together forever. Now, I've had shorter forevers after that, okay? But I have blown it now. I have fallen in love, and I've allowed myself to be in love. And I was just destroyed. I was just destroyed. And someone, as she said, I'd had some 12-step experience, and but boy, my heart was broken at this point, right? I had, this is when I come home from graduate school, I'm doing the thing, I fall in love, it's, you know, it blows up. And what I know today is that I caused that. I caused that. Let me tell you what it would have looked like if you were dating me and we were going to a party. Okay, we walk in, and we didn't really have handcuffs. No, some of you don't go there. But, you know, we're attached, and then, of course, we're not going to speak to anyone else unless both of us choose to speak to them, right? And so we go over here, and then go over here. What do you mean you need to go to the bathroom? Okay, let's go. When I lived with somebody, I wanted to do things. Oh, this is some of the part I wish wasn't true. Okay, I wanted to wake up at the same moment. And you look over, and you don't drink coffee, but that's okay. You could drink it if that's what, you know, they want. Or you go get coffee, and you have coffee, and then you, of course, have breakfast together. And then you get in your car and drive to the place where both of you work. Yeah. And then, well, you eat the lunch that you've made together. You go somewhere, you invite somebody out to dinner, and you only talk to each other. You go to bed, you fall asleep just the same time as each other. Okay? And then you wake up. That's where I had gotten. That's basic. Shoot me today. Shoot me, right? Okay. So I've given you some examples. I got to tell you. No, I did not live with a husband or a wife in active alcoholism. My very foundation of life was alcoholism. And it was a thread through everything that I did. Everything that I did. And so it was suggested that I go to Al-Anon. And I really did go, like, seriously? Seriously? And friends and family and friends of alcoholics. And so I consented to do that. The people I trusted, I'd met some folks, Linda and Dennis Lamphere. And because they gave me my foundation in my 12-step programs, I want to tell you about them. So I'd met them, and actually my other sponsor said, you need to go to Al-Anon. And I said, okay. But because I'd been in another program, I walked in already knowing stuff. I mean, I knew a lot of stuff, okay? I was kind of early in that other program, but yet I knew stuff already. So apparently, I was willing to share stuff. And I kind of got busted, but anyway, and actually I was told to go, it was recommended that I go to a meeting where no one knew me. And so maybe I could be a newcomer, okay? And I want you to know that I did that. I want to tell you about that meeting. I walked in and the chairs were set up and the lights were on, as I've heard some of my giants talk about. And they had a chairperson, and there was a topic. And after the meeting, they came up to me and they asked me if I was new, and they talked to me and they showed me literature. That's what happened. And I went back, and I went back a few times. It didn't take me long to feel better. Yeah. It didn't take me long to feel better. And I want you to know that when I felt better, I left. Because it would have never dawned on me that there was somebody when I walked in the door and my heart was broken and I didn't know what to do. I'd never had anybody to talk to at home. I told you throughout my life I never talked to anybody. I was not ever going to let anybody get close to me. And they gave me everything that Al-Anon has to offer. And I left. Because I would have never thought of sticking around. And that's why I say it was just a drive-by experience. And I want you to know that about 4 years later, it might have been 4 years later, I walked into an Al-Anon meeting and I sat all the way down. You know, I don't think it's dramatic for us in these programs to say, you know, that saved my whole life. Some people, if they saw you outside of, you know, not of the program, they go, they saved your whole life. Yes. There are things that I've heard in meetings that changed my life. It could be one sentence that you said, changed my whole life. And also, I think that I'd be willing to say that I have friends who will be lifelong friends if I cultivate that relationship while working this program. They will be lifetime friends. People look at you like lifelong friends. I don't think those were dramatic statements anymore. Because after I sat all the way down, I did that couple, Linda and Dennis, I wanted not only what they had individually, but I wanted what they had as far as a marriage. It wasn't perfect. You know that. People in couples, just because they're in the program. But I did want what they had as a couple. And so I began to work with both of them. Now, you're going to like me a whole lot more when I tell you how this was at first, and then I want to move on. But I would call sometimes. Don't call when you're really right. You know, you wake up and you are just so right about something. Okay? And when somebody's wrong, I get righter by the second. Okay? And so that's not the time to call. But I was just frantic because somebody had done something really wrong. So, man, I was driving like this home. And so I called, and whoever answered, if they knew I was on the line, they'd say, "Pick up. It takes a village." So most of the time I would have both of them on the home. Most of the time I'd have both of them. And I would be, you know, it's like a little girl that I used to sponsor in a program. When she got so excited, you know, they can't finish a sentence. Oh, and then, well, that's what I was doing. I was like, and then she, what? And so one of them said, it's probably Dennis, said, "This sounds important." And I said, "And I'm talking. Can't suck it back in." And he said, "Well, let me get a cup of coffee, and I'll be right back." And I said, "Okay, I'll wait." And he said, "Oh, no, you go ahead." And Linda probably said, "I'm going to get coffee, too." I mean, seriously. But what they said next was, because when I get back, we're going to get to the exact nature of the wrong. And we're going to move into the solution. Boy, I have somebody that loves me that much today, and I sure hope you do too. Because, boy, I am serious. I just wanted somebody to hear the story and tell me a plan to go how I could punish them the next day. So, that's who I met, and I began to say, what do you want me to do? I began to get there early. I began to say, okay, they used to have ashtrays and real cups. Some of you want me to show, they have real cups here for some of you youth. Not, they weren't always styrofoam, okay? We had cups, and when I was first asked to wash the cups or the ashtrays, I said, I don't smoke, and I don't drink coffee. But you know what the next thing is, I didn't ask you. But you see what I'm saying? I was terrified to be new in Al-Anon. I was terrified because I need to look good. But I want you to know, with their guidance, one day at a time, I did what they said to do. And so that's how I was. That's what happened. But let me tell you, I called one time and I said, I was just wondering, I am doing everything you've asked me to do. I'm going to meetings, I'm praying on my knees, I'm studying the literature. No, I said, I'm doing all the things that you asked me to do. So what am I going to get? So I can give it away and give it away. We're pretty sharp if you think about it. Just give that away. Whatever it is that I get, I want to just share. Well, they trick you. Sponsors trick you. How many agree? You know, they start out really sweet until you ask them to be your sponsor. Okay? And so I was told, these two people on the each line, and I'll tell you the ones that absolutely are about my Al-Anon. I've got some promises for you that can come true for the rest of your life if you stay in the middle of your program. I promise you. And it describes my life today. I want you to know how it is today. And the first one for Linda said was, if you go to meetings, somebody like you, a lot of them, you're going to meet people that feel the same way you do, even though their outsides are not the same as yours. When I first got to you, I wanted to not kind of notice what kind of car you drove or what side of town you lived in. I wanted somebody to hear me so badly. Just hear me. I wanted you to know whether I was hurting or whether I was happy. You could not have known. I wanted that. And you're telling me, if I go to a lot of meetings and I listen to what you share, the truth that's in that meeting, that I'm going to meet people who know how I feel on the inside, whether they ever have the same thing or not. You don't have to describe fear in an Al-Anon meeting. And so that's a promise, and I'll leave it here, by the way. And I was also promised that if I'd study the literature, Judith and I were talking about, she, like myself, had edited a lot of the literature. Well, some of it, if you'll admit, it was kind of archaic written. Not as much, but, you know, there were things that, you know, I needed to change. And I had done that, but I'm being asked to study. And I sure enough didn't think I would need to study the Al-Anon books because I already knew about 12-step recovery. I study the Al-Anon books today because you can open, you know, you have a problem, and anybody that are sitting with your sponsor, and they just go like this. These Al-Anons with 50 years, They just open the book and they go, there's the answer to your problem, right? It's because most of the literature is telling us how to get closer to, find that power greater than yourself and then do whatever it takes to get closer to that. I know it. I know the trick now. But that was a promise to me. If you study the literature, I've had people in my home. I tell you what, if you have people in your home to study the literature, your home will never be the same. That's a promise. So I was another, that's another example of what my life looks like today. I was also promised that, God would always be big enough. Whew. No matter what, God would always be big enough. Anybody else ever said, well, finances, romances would always be big enough? And this is my best example. Do you remember those parents that I treated so, so horribly? I said to them, I said things to them that should never have been said. Boy, the bell had been rung and I couldn't take it back. I couldn't unring it. And I just, because of them, I had pointed at them my whole life and I never once told you what my part was in that process. Well, this happened. My dad got sick. And I'd been in the program and for a while. My dad got sick, but I had not done anything to heal that relationship. I remember being told when I got in Al-Anon, if I would work the steps of Al-Anon and do the things that I was told to do in Al-Anon and not get creative, right? Not get creative, that I could get my family back. I'm sorry to say that my first response was, whoa, whoa. She just passed out. Hey, it's the first time she stayed awake during my whole talk. So, I didn't want my family back. I didn't think I wanted my family back. But let me tell you what happened. My daddy got very ill and he was in the hospital. And something happened in me that I didn't see coming. So I remember my daddy, I walked into my daddy's room and he said, you know, he was very emotional. I'd never seen my dad emotional. I'd never touched my dad, hugged. We'd never done any of that, trust me. And he said, you know, the doctor was just here and he said he can't help me. He said, there's nothing they can do for me. And I did not do two things. I didn't crack a joke to make sure, you know, oh, let's don't think about that. I didn't crack a joke. And I looked him in the eye and I said, Daddy, I think that's right. I think that's what they're saying. And I think it's going to be okay. And I didn't know what okay was. Remember, I came knowing everything. And I didn't know what that was. But I couldn't get out of that room faster. And I called my sponsor, and I did have both of them on the phone. And I said, I don't know what to do. And it was suggested that I go back in the room and that I touch him. Oh, I could not believe it. And I walked back in, and the first thing that I did was grab my daddy's foot. Because that was the best I could do. So I'm standing there holding my daddy's foot. And then I left. And I wanted to A+. So I called and I said, okay, well, they want you to keep doing it. Your sponsors. So I went back in the next day and I remember putting my hand on his shoulder. You know what I'm saying? I just went through the process and then I was told to tell him that I loved him if I did. It's a difference. And I realized that I did. That you had given me the whole package. That a lot of what happened growing up was part of the problem, but I was the only one responsible for my recovery. And I tell him that you love him if you do. And I walked back in, and I put my hand on his shoulder, and I said, Daddy, I love you, and Natalie's picking me up out front. And I'm going to go to town and get some sandwiches. Would you like anything? Best I could do. But he heard the I love you part. And I did that every day, every day. And my daddy, that was in May, every time I saw him, I took, actually quit a job so that I could help my mom. And I was at the radiation center every day for that 20 minutes. And I told him that I loved him every time I saw him. And that was May. And Christmas Day at 4 o'clock, he went home. And somebody else said, no unfinished business, none, nothing unsaid. Because somebody told me what to say. No matter what, you tell me what to say and I'm going to do it. Well, I got 12 more years with my mom. Let's speed this up. I had 12 more years with my mom. But on the way home from the funeral, my dad's funeral, I could tell that my I'd never seen my mother cry. Whatever. And I called them and I said, I don't know what to do. My mother seems like emotional. She was always like a rock, okay? And they said, well, are you telling her that you love her? Are you hugging her? Now, it's funny, sad. I said, she's not sick. You know what's sad about that? That was my best. I didn't have left to my own devices. But for 12 years, I never talked to her on the phone, and I never saw her that I didn't hug her and tell her I loved her. Now, untreated, she grew up in alcoholism. She lived with an active alcoholic. So my mother was like hugging this podium. Whew. Let me tell you, without you standing there, I said, why do I have to do it? Why do I have to hug her? I could hug a telephone pole, something real smart like that. And I'm not going to repeat really what the response was. But I want you to know I started hugging her. I kept hugging her and telling her I love her. And I got to tell you, I remember the color of the recliner when I walked in the door one time to my mother's house. And she's climbing out of the recliner to give me a hug. And she didn't let go. She didn't let go. And as a lot of people say, that's really just all your fault. It's just all your fault. I did everything they asked me to do. Well, I had that opportunity, and I don't remember how long it was. But I got to move my mom to, I bought a house so that my mom could come. I was willing to do anything for her. Again, I didn't have time to pay back. She was my mama. I should have treated her with dignity and honor, like it says in that other book. But I never did it. I'd have done anything. I don't cook for people I love. But my mama, one morning, I don't know why, I said, Mama, what would you like for breakfast? She said, bacon. I think I cooked it for 45 minutes. Because, God, why is this stuff come? You know, it was the heat was like this, but it didn't curl up, man. It just laid there. But my mother said it was the best bacon she'd ever had. My mother wanted, I said, do you want me to wash your hands in warm water and do your nails? I'm going, no, no. And you know what? I did that. I was hoping she'd want clear, but she wanted pink. She shook and I shook. When she said yes, I said, what do I do? I said, what do I do? And Sherilyn said, get a bowl and put warm water in it. You get me? But that was on a Sunday, and my mama was in the hospital by Tuesday. And I was sitting up Monday, and then it was Tuesday, and I had a commitment. And she knew that you taught me commitments, doing what you said you'd do long after the feeling's gone when you said yes. She knew I had a commitment. She kept saying, you need to go. And I realized I was up in the bed with her, and one of my favorite whines, apparently, when I first got in the program in Al-Anon, when I started actually doing work on my family, was I don't even know if my mother rocked me when I was a baby, which might be appropriate when you're 10, but when you're 56, I don't even know. Well, guess what? I was in the bed, and my mother had her head on my shoulder, and I was rocking her. I was rocking her, and I'll never forget it. And then I said, Mama, I got to go. I know you want me to go. And you want to get in the chair? She said, I'd like to get in the chair. So I helped her in the chair, and I knelt in front of her. Should have done it before then, but that day I looked in her eyes. I knelt before, and I said, Mama, did I tell you today how glad I am your mama? And thank God it wasn't the first time. Because when I left that room, I got on an airplane, I landed, and my phone rang, and my mama had gone home. No unfinished business. How could it have gone from my hatred, and my behavior that was just horrible, to getting to have unfinished business with my mom and daddy? How does that happen? Well, I can tell you how. You walk into Al-Anon and you sit all the way down. That's how I know that God is big enough. There is nothing about that that had anything to do with me. And the last promise was, Nancy, do a little bit. Do a little bit. You know, if Jason calls or somebody wants you to come and share, even if it's Jason. That's five. That's five times. So, and Vinoy, and Vinoy, and Vinoy. She lives close to me in Texas. Okay. Just give away a little bit. Do what you're asked to do. And you will get back tenfold. Do a little bit. You'll get back tenfold. Just look around. Look around right now. Thank you for the privilege of sharing in your convention. Thank you.